Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
Time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Coming up on the show, we talk to debt campaigner Joel Benjamin. But first, Brexitus. Stacy?
Max, one of your favorite guys is in the news. We're right here in the United Kingdom. We're in London and we're outdoors in Soho. And it's just remarkable that it is a massive, massive construction site. I have never seen anything like this in any city I've ever been to. Perhaps Shanghai looks like this when they were building from nothing into a massive city. But nevertheless, it's so huge, you would not know that there is such a Brexitus based on the amount of construction happening. But Britain should consider delaying Brexit and extending EU talks to avoid a devastating outcome, Tony Blair says. Theresa May is heading into the EU Leaders Summit on Thursday, at which her European counterparts are set to rebuke her over the slow progress of the negotiations. The UK is due to exit the EU on March 29th, 2019, but talks are stuck on the terms of the divorce and no serious discussions have started on the kind of trade arrangement the two sides will have in the future.
Yeah, well, you know, we knew this was coming, didn't we? That's just, it's too big a job, too complicated, and Britain never had any leverage going into these talks, and now it's just becoming a farce and collapsing as we knew it would. I mean, there was a great story in the paper today about some Brexit minister leaving a laptop full of key documents on the Eurostar. I mean, that's typical. That's you know, James Bond is like meant to deflect attention. This is the opposite of James Bond here. It's bumbling people. They can't figure out the simplest things.
Actually, we have a friend in from America as well that we were talking to last night, and we had said to him that, you know, how bungling the British are about these sort of things, and that it's often you find like MI6 agents leaving USB keys with state secrets, and they leave it on a bus in Bolivia or something like that. So we had already talked about it. Then, lo and behold, a news item today does say that May's minister left this documents. But May is struggling to help to build a consensus within her cabinet on what kind of customs and trade model to propose to the EU. She's promised more detail and a 150-page plan to be published next month, but must first win the support of her most senior ministers. I also saw a headline, which is very amusing in light of all of this, that Angela Merkel of Germany, of course, you know, Germany runs Europe, essentially. Angela Merkel says she'll miss the UK.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think that's a great statement, isn't it? I mean, they really are just going to be cut off from that $17 trillion economy. And it's a great place to get some Marmite, though.
And before we throw to Joel Benjamin, I want to say that Tony Blair also raised fear that the rise of populism in the West poses a real threat to democracy, raising the specter of a return to the kind of fascist politics that Europe witnessed in the 1930s. He said, quote, "The populist wave upending Western politics shows no sign of abating. It is difficult to predict whether we are at the crest of the wave, which will soon subside, or whether it is still building its momentum. But I fear it is the latter." So let's turn to Joel Benjamin. He's a debt campaigner. And of course, you know, it's Tony Blair's policies that led to this so-called wave of populism. What do you have to say about what he has to say?
I think you did right, Stacey. I mean, if you look at, you know, Tony Blair's legacy going back to, you know, the war in Iraq, you know, we had 1 million people out in the streets here in the UK protesting against that particular invasion. We've had, you know, over a decade of turbulence in the Middle East, waves of migrants being forced to flee war zones. And of course, Tony Blair doesn't want to confront the fact that he is directly responsible for this catastrophe. So great for Tony Blair to come out and warn about Brexit. But I mean, we've got to face the fact that his economic policies, including things like the private finance initiative, which you've covered on your show, have been responsible for transferring billions of pounds of public revenues to the City of London, have sucked wealth out of the regions, and a lot of this populism we're seeing is actually anger about financialization and neoliberalism, something which Blair spent, you know, the best part of a decade championing in government.
Actually, I saw another headline, and it doesn't really relate to Brexit, but I guess a little bit, and that is BAE had some big deal they just landed with, I guess, the Australian government. And well, all those profits will go to the shareholders and the executives at BAE, and yet BAE itself is totally almost all financed by the British taxpayer and the British Foreign Policy Office, you know, the Foreign Minister's Office and all that sort of stuff. Of course, Tony Blair did help cover up a slush fund situation there. So what about that outsourcing now in terms of the Brexitus that is happening? A lot of these corporations are fleeing London, they say. They're going to Germany, they're going to France, they're going to Italy.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, you look at the big outsourcing companies like, you know, Serco, Capita. You know, we saw a big meltdown in the UK earlier this year of Carillion. And basically what's happening is you're seeing political risk start to crystallize on company balance sheets. So a lot of these companies made fat profits for decades doing government outsourcing deals in the UK. Now, for a range of factors, including political risk, the risk that the UK might leave the EU and our economy might tank, the fact the property market here could be in set for a correction as foreign capital kind of flees the UK. For a range of reasons, we're seeing multinational corporations start to retract from the UK, and it's particularly prevalent in financial services. And the reason financial companies are relocating from the UK is that when the EU was formed, basically what you had was the Ireland and the UK negotiate for a variation in legal principle when it was set up. So the UK and Ireland operate on the principle of caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. In the rest of Europe, operate on a duty of good faith to their clients. So what you have is the UK has become a centre for mis-selling for American and global banks based in the UK, but being able to passport and mis-sell into Europe. Now, if Britain separates from the EU, those companies can no longer do that. They can't passport. They need a new base in Europe. So a lot of them are, funnily enough, moving to Dublin. So we're seeing a great migration of banks, financial firms, engineering companies from Britain to both Ireland and mainland Europe because of that.
Right. So, Joel Benjamin, when the whole Brexit was propositioned, the talk at that time was sovereignty. We want our sovereignty. We don't want to take orders from Brussels. Now that this actually coming to fruition and things are really happening, I don't hear that talk anymore. It's all about, wait a minute, let's put pencil to paper, look at the numbers, and the numbers don't add up. At the time, again, going back to when it was first proposed and the referendum was voted on, and I brought this up to people and said, the numbers are horrible. This is going to be an economic disaster. People said, well, you know, I'm willing to accept that. I'm willing to take that sacrifice for our sovereignty. Now that the actual numbers are coming through and it looks like tremendous sacrifices will be made, I don't feel it anymore. People seem to really care about the numbers now, Joel.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if we look at the people who were pushing Brexit, people like Jacob Rees-Mogg and Nigel Farage, what we have are economic fundamentalists. I mean, these are people who have made their career in the City of London, private equity, hedge funds, very kind of Darwinian view of society, dog eat dog. And they were quite happy to, you know, spin this kind of great myth to the British people that Brexit was going to create this huge bounty. We were giving all this money to Europe and suddenly we'll have all this free cash, this, you know, mythical £350 million to spend on the NHS every month. So, you know, all this has turned out to be completely kind of false. But then we shouldn't be surprised because our legal system allows people to peddle myths with impunity, and there's no consequence. So until we go back to these legal principles which allow our politicians and businesses to mis-sell financial products or ideas to the population without consequence, without being held to account, we're going to continue to see these, you know, so-called political disasters like Brexit because people remain completely uninformed about what the real issues are. They can't trust their media, they can't trust their politicians, and so they don't know where to go for information.
So let's actually talk a little bit further about that, because one thing about Brexit is, yeah, I could see that it's a stupid thing to do. But the fact is you had, when we were here watching the lead up to the referendum, and all you had on the BBC, on Channel 4, on ITV, was all that class of people are primarily, they were against Brexit. And it was written all over the face that they had contempt. They just insulted those who were going to vote for Brexit. And perhaps many of them were contemptible. Nevertheless, they were presented with this democratic option of just getting a small, you know, just a 51% of the vote and you could have Brexit. And the media also presented to them the face of Tony Blair, the face of David Cameron. And, you know, we've had 10 years, the latest data coming out from the UK government only on Friday show that 10 years of no wage growth. You've had bleak prospects here in terms of the income for the average ordinary person. So, you know, you present this cauldron of contempt to the population and you give them the opportunity to kick the neoliberal elite in their teeth, and they took it. Nevertheless, it was the government that offered them this option. So it, however, appears that they remarkably still have no idea what they are going to do. What does a Brexit with no deal look like? What is it? What happens?
So I mean, one of the things which happens or might happen, and the Bank of England was kind of warning about this in the past week, is that the vast majority of derivative contracts are centered in Britain and London, because we have in London the International Swaps and Derivatives Association. And those contracts, those financial contracts, derivatives, are governed under British law. So if we have a hard Brexit scenario and Britain leaves the European Union, the legal status and ongoing use of around 30 trillion of financial derivative contracts is suddenly in jeopardy. What happens in that scenario? Nobody knows. You know, we're approaching another anniversary of LTCM. We've seen what carnage a relatively small institution like LTCM can cause, where derivative contracts and risk in financial markets is, you know, poorly understood, and it's hard to see who carries that risk. So I guess one of the concerns here is that in a hard Brexit scenario, those contracts suddenly become illegitimate, and you start seeing cascading kind of losses across financial markets and nobody really knowing where that risk ends up. So what we have here potentially is Britain being able to hold a gun to the head of European institutions and say, look, until we get this sorted out, we want a good deal on Brexit. Otherwise, we're going to pull the trigger and we're not sure who's going to be shot, but it's not going to be pretty. So this is, I think, one issue which is of enormous concern, and particularly given the sort of research we've been doing at Debt Resistance UK, which looks at derivative risk in public institutions, NHS trusts, local government, which is off balance sheet. It's not kind of looked at by regulators. Nobody knows which banks are counterparties to these contracts. And so enormous financial risks, which our regulators aren't even beginning to look at.
Right. I mean, the leverage you're talking about there is incredible. You know, tens of trillions of a nominal value of derivatives, but creating hundreds of trillions of dollars worth of trading activity on a weekly basis. So if it comes to this kind of gunfight between the City of London and Europe, any false move could just cause an enormous blow up that will have a cascading effect. And if they're not cooperating to begin with, then we should expect that there's going to be a problem.
Yes, I mean, obviously this could come to pass as early as March 2019. We have the so-called Brexit cliff edge. There has been some, you know, attempts at negotiation between the City of London and Europe. Often the city tends to get its way in negotiations with European institutions. Obviously, this time it could be very different given the UK is effectively threatening to leave.
So, but Merkel is deciding things.
Yeah, to a point. I mean, you also talk about the European Central Bank, which is a major player in these sorts of negotiations and is, you know, largely undemocratic. So you do have these, you know, quite large financial kind of powerhouses within Europe, which aren't really subject to any sort of formal democratic oversight, which do have a lot of kind of sway in these negotiations. You could say a similar thing about the Bank of England. So a lot of these negotiations will be happening behind closed doors, and we're not necessarily privy to the sorts of conversations that are being had.
Oh, but of course, you know, as you mentioned, London is the center for most global financial fraud. So I'm assuming also the European banks want that relationship to be there, that option for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things going on. So one is that it would be obviously in the German, Italian, French interest to try and win some of that kind of that business from London were there to be a hard Brexit and firms to relocate. So, you know, we've already seen some big firms starting to relocate senior management to places like sort of Paris, Frankfurt, in anticipation of Brexit. And so I think that is likely to continue the longer these impasse negotiations goes on. So, I mean, yeah, there is going to be a jockeying of positioning for certain European financial centers to try and win business from London. We'll see that in the derivative space. We'll see it in fund management. We'll see it in banking. But obviously, yeah, the details are yet to play out.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Joel Benjamin. Until next week. Bye, y'all.